Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Welcome back, folks. Things are falling into place finally, and hopefully in this hour we'll get it all right. It's been a crazy day today. We want to thank you for your patience. We had technical difficulties earlier, and thank you for hanging around and hanging in there for us. We are joined by Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. The Louisiana legislative session is winding down, and Ron, a lot happened this session, but it was pretty much dominated by redistricting before it was all said and done, right?
Yeah, that was the big issue, and it's going to continue to be an issue because we still don't know to what extent the courts will allow the new plan that the legislature came up with, and so we'll have to see where that goes, but you're going to have an election later in the year for Congress, and it'll be different from what it was last time, but it'll be closer to what it was the time before. So if voters aren't confused over all of this, I don't know when they'll be confused.
Yeah. One of the things that I think you would agree, folks don't really understand this process. This is not something new, right? This has gone on for decades. And you've seen some states that have just been gerrymandered to ensure the election of candidates from one party and no other. And you've got states where it's blended. We've been blended for a long time, but because of the most recent Calais decision, things change, right?
Right. You know, traditionally, redistricting was done to protect incumbents. That was the first thing they did. And but then over time, more recently, you had the Voting Rights Act, which required states to not determine districts based on race in a way that would keep black voters from having a chance to elect a black member of Congress. And then that criteria has changed as the Supreme Court has adjusted what that means and how you can use politics and how you can use race to determine it. Anyway, the bottom line is, it's always difficult and for a legislature to know exactly what they're supposed to do because the courts aren't always that clear, and it's not always clear what the requirements are. And but now it's becoming purely partisan, purely, the Democrats are trying to create as many seats as they can. The Republicans are trying to create as many seats as they can. And it looks like that's going to be the new criteria, and unless the courts stop them.
You know, what was interesting is a lot of the rhetoric and the dialogue that was being used and this term being racist, being bannered about up in Baton Rouge for several weeks now. I was kind of mystified by a lot of that discourse because the manner in which the court decision came down, it was clear that the second minority district that was created fit exactly what the court was talking about, that they utilize race as the primary motivation to create that district, right?
Yeah, and and of course that's the other problem. People can actually use one criteria when they and then say they're using another criteria. So it gets there to sort that out. But yeah, one of the things that I thought was disturbing, and I'm not attacking either side here, it's just the bottom line of it, is that there was more racial division, I thought, in this legislative session than we have seen probably since, I don't know since when, because in the old days of segregation, when there was a lot of racial, you know, hatred and legislation moving around, you didn't have black members of the legislature. So, right. So now we're in a situation where the whole idea of race is really dominated the legislative politics this year, and in New Orleans, and it wasn't just the legislation on Congress. It was also legislation on a new clerk of court and what's going to happen with the judges, and all of that was sort of defined and seen as being racially motivated. So there were a lot of fractures this time. That's not good for the state in the long run.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It seemed to open a number of wounds. You know, for the city, I've been a little bit concerned because I think there were a lot of kumbaya moments over the past several months of folks trying to assist the city in the financial doldrums that they find themselves in. And I know that the city's going to be going back to the bond commission. They're going to need state help. They're going to need help from the state legislature in the future. And the way that the dialogue went, I was kind of like, you know, you've been around a long time. I've been around a long time. I look at it and I said, I don't know that these wounds are going to heal so fast. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I think you're right. And those kinds of wounds don't heal very fast. It takes a lot of work on both sides to bring people back together. And I'm concerned that that those wounds are worsening, not getting better. And again, we'll have to see where it goes. You know, legislative sessions have limited lives. They're over and done with, and then you've got to live with what was done. And I think after this session, I don't see where many of the politicians involved were particularly helped by it. I would think most of them sort of shared some of the blame for what happened, and so it ends up not a good thing for the state.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, a lot of folks were critical of dealing with that second district at this point in time, but I think I would agree with the governor. Why conduct an election for a district that's already been ruled unconstitutional, right? And it's kind of like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would we want to go through that exercise?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's in the voters' interest, too, because there's no reason to ask people to go vote on districts that ultimately aren't going to be there, so they can have to vote again anyway. But you know, one of the issues that this raises is it seems to me that there needs to be some requirement, and I'm not sure whether Congress can do this or not. I think they can. I don't think it's against the Constitution, but to require that rulings related to ongoing elections need to provide enough time for states to call new, you know, to have elections and to have the rulings in time where you don't have to cancel elections and you don't have to push them back. But because it just doesn't seem to make.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Makes sense. I remember some years ago back in the 70s, the New Orleans City Council was in the middle of a big reapportionment fight. And the current council members, as I recall, served over 6 years instead of 4 years because the elections were postponed for a couple of years. And that was just an abuse of the process. And I think while, you know, I understand the courts have the right to make these determinations, I think, and, you know, they have a responsibility to protect elections, to make sure they're just and they're fair and they're honest. But they should also make sure that they're orderly and that you're not, you know, flipping a coin on when these elections are going to be held and what the district's going to look like right before, just literally as it happened this time, days before people started voting. And I think that's something that members of Congress from both sides could probably agree on.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you wholeheartedly. It's amazing, though, Ron, and I think you'll agree with this, how many people don't recall that that went on in the 70s and don't think that it was a gerrymander. I said it was absolutely a gerrymander.
Sure, sure. And, you know, and I mean, what's a gerrymander to one person is good government to another person. So, so you know, it really depends on whose ox is being gored here. And in those days, a lot of it was, like I had said earlier, about protecting incumbents, you know, making sure all the incumbents had their seats and they had districts as close as possible to the district that they won from. But, of course, now it goes beyond that.
Yeah. If we could pivot just to national politics for a second, I know that you always have your finger on the pulse of that. A lot of the Trump endorsed candidates have fared pretty damn well for the most part. And it looks like, though, that this is setting up for what I think is going to be a really volatile midterm. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that, too. You know, we've had presidents before who have had influence on their party, like Ronald Reagan was tremendously popular among Republicans, Franklin Roosevelt, John Kennedy, among voters in their party, as well as Barack Obama and some of the more recent politicians. But the but Donald Trump isn't just popular among Republicans. He essentially controls the Republican Party. He's controlling who's nominated for what, and who's running for what, who gets money, who gets endorsements, and it's a level of control that we've never seen before. Now, he wouldn't be able to do it if the Republican voters didn't want to go along with it. So it's not just something he's able to do on his own. He's doing it because, you know, over 60% of the voters in Texas went to the polls and voted for his candidate. And here in Louisiana, we had almost 3/4 of the electorate voted for candidates who were acceptable to him in the U.S. Senate race. So he has a level of control that is really extraordinary. And we always knew he had a lot of influence on Republican primaries. But it's to the point now where he really has a hammer lock. And, my Democratic friends always come and say, well, why do the Republicans stick with him all the time? Why does Mike Johnson do whatever he wants? Why does, you know, so-and-so always go along with Trump? And the answer is because if they didn't, they would lose their job. Now, some people say, well, you know, these jobs aren't worth not doing what you think is right, so go ahead and risk losing your job, as Bill Cassidy did. You know, if he hadn't voted to convict Donald Trump after the impeachment, he wouldn't have lost re-election this time. He would have sailed into an easy election. So it has big, big political consequences, and we've never seen this before.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Because he is lame duck, right? And do you think that the traditional downsides to being lame duck are going to apply to him as he approaches the back half of this four-year term?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, he's a lame duck as president, but he doesn't appear to be a lame duck as leader of the Republican Party. And and that's a big difference. You know, usually presidents in you know, the last couple of years of their term, even though they're still doing things and pushing things they want done, their political involvement may not be as much. And because they're sort of turning over the reins of power to somebody else. Well, Donald Trump ultimately has to turn over the White House. I don't see any legal way that he could run again. But that doesn't necessarily mean he has to turn over power over the Republican Party. And he's very much not a lame duck there. He's very much a quacking, running, walking, alive duck when it comes to being a leader of the Republican Party. And, you know, the question is, how long does it go? Will he try to pick the next Republican nominee for president? Probably so. Will he oppose members of Congress or oppose presidential candidates in 2 years from now who aren't supporters of his within the party? Of course he will. So that could just continue going.
Yeah, that's going to be telling to see, you know, because part of the when you have that kind of influence in the party, it's because you've got all the trappings of the office, you know, out there that loom. And that translates into more and more authority inside of the party. Once that's removed, it's kind of interesting to see where this all goes, right?
Yeah, but it really depends on the voters, you know, what yeah. they want to do. Andrew Jackson had something similar where his pick for president with Martin Van Buren and James K. Polk were elected president. So even though after he left office, he had a number of presidents and a lot of members of Congress who still supported him and went along with his wishes. So we did see some of it then, but this is more so than I think we've ever seen.
No, absolutely. As always, Ron Fauché, totally enjoy the conversation with you, sir. Appreciate your time and your insight, and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. You want to check that out. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.